This is a 2008 reading of Rudolf Steiner's book, Knowledge of the Higher Worlds and Its Attainment. This is Chapter 10, The Guardian of the Threshold. The important experiences marking the student's ascent into the higher worlds include his meeting with the Guardian of the Threshold. Strictly speaking, there are two guardians, a lesser and a greater. The student meets the lesser guardian when the threads connecting willing, feeling, and thinking within the finer astral and etheric bodies begin to loosen, in the way described in the foregoing chapter. The greater guardian is encountered when this sundering of the connections extends to the physical parts of the body, that is, at first, to the brain. The lesser guardian is a sovereign being. He does not come into existence, as far as the student is concerned, until the latter has reached the requisite stage of development. Only some of his most important characteristics can here be indicated. The attempt will now be made to describe in narrative form this meeting with the lesser guardian of the threshold, as a result of which the student learns that his thinking, feeling, and willing have become released within him from their inherent connection. A truly terrible spectral being confronts him, and he will need all the presence of mind and faith in the security of his path, which he has had ample opportunity to acquire in the course of his previous training. The guardian proclaims his signification somewhat in the following words, quote, "Hitherto, powers invisible to thyself watched over thee. They saw to it that in the course of thy lives each of thy good deeds brought its reward, and each of thine evil deeds was attended by its evil results. Thanks to their influence, thy character formed itself out of thy life experiences and thy thoughts. They were the instruments of thy destiny. They ordained the measure of joy and pain allotted to thee in thine incarnations, according to thy conduct in lives gone by. They ruled over thee as the all-embracing law of karma. These powers will now partly release thee from their constraining influence, and henceforth must thou accomplish for thyself a part of the work which hitherto they performed for thee. Destiny struck thee many a hard blow in the past. Thou knewest not why. Each blow is the consequence of a harmful deed in a bygone life. Thou foundest joy and gladness, and thou didst take them as they came. They too were the fruits of former deeds. Thy character shows many a beautiful side and many an ugly flaw. Thou hast thyself to thank for both, for they are the result of thy previous experiences and thoughts. These were, till now, unknown to thee. Their effects alone were made manifest. The karmic powers, however, beheld all thy deeds in former lives, and all thy most secret thoughts and feelings, and determined accordingly thy present self and thy present mode of life. But now, all the good and evil sides of thy bygone lives shall be revealed to thee. Hitherto they were interwoven with thine own being. They were in thee, and thou couldst not see them, even as thou canst not behold thine own brain with physical eyes. But now they become released from thee. They detach themselves from thy personality. They assume an independent form, which thou canst see even as thou beholdest the stones and plants of the outer world. And I am that very being who shaped my body out of thy good and evil achievements. My spectral form is woven out of thine own life's record. Till now thou hast borne me invisibly within thee, and it was well that this was so. For the wisdom of thy destiny, though concealed from thee, could thus work within thee, so that the hideous stains on my form should be blotted out. Now that I have come forth from within thee, that concealed wisdom too has departed from thee. It will pay no further heed to thee. It will leave the work in thy own in thy hands alone. I must become a perfect and glorious being, or fall a prey to corruption. And should this occur, I would drag thee also down with me into a dark and corrupt world. If thou wouldst avoid this, then thine own wisdom must become great enough to undertake the task of that other concealed wisdom which has departed from thee. As a form visible to thyself, I will never for an instant leave thy side once thou hast crossed my threshold. And in future, whenever thou dost act or think wrongly, thou wilt straightway perceive thy guilt as a hideous, demoniacal distortion of my form. Only when thou hast made good all thy bygone wrongs, and hast so purified thyself that all further evil is for thee a thing impossible, only then will my being have become transformed into radiant beauty. Then, too, shall I again become united with thee for the welfare of thy future activity. Yet my threshold is fashioned out of all the timidity that remains in thee, out of all the dread of the strength needed to take full responsibility for all thy thoughts and actions. As long as there remains in thee a trace of fear of becoming thyself, the guide of thine own destiny, just so long will this threshold lack what still remains to be built into it. And as long as a single stone is found missing, just so long must thou remain standing as though transfixed, or else stumble. Seek not, then, to cross this threshold until thou dost feel thyself entirely free from fear and ready for the highest responsibility. Hitherto I only emerged from thy personality when death recalled thee from an earthly life. But even then my form was veiled from thee. Only the powers of destiny who watched over thee beheld me, and could thus in the intervals between death and a new birth build in thee, in accordance with my appearance, that power and capacity thanks to which thou couldst labor in a new earth life at the beautifying of my form for thy welfare and progress. It was I, too, whose imperfection ever and again constrained the powers of destiny to lead thee back to a new incarnation upon earth. I was present at the hour of thy death, and it was on my account that the lords of karma ordained thy reincarnation. And it is only by thus unconsciously transforming me to complete perfection in ever-recurring earthly lives that thou couldst have escaped the powers of death, and passed over into immortality united with me. Visible do I thus stand before thee today, just as I have ever stood invisible beside thee in the hour of death. When thou shalt have crossed my threshold, thou wilt enter those realms to which thou hast hitherto only had access after physical death. Thou dost now enter them with full knowledge, and henceforth, as thou wanderest outwardly visible upon the earth, thou wilt at the same time wander in the kingdom of death, that is, in the kingdom of life eternal. I am indeed the angel of death, but I am at the same time the bearer of a higher life without end. Through me thou wilt die with thy body still living, to be reborn into an imperishable existence. Into this kingdom thou art now entering. Thou wilt meet beings that are supersensible, and happiness will be thy lot. But I myself must provide thy first acquaintance with that world, and I am thine own creation. Formerly I drew my life from thine, but now thou hast awakened me to a separate existence, so that I stand before thee as the visible gauge of thy future deeds, perhaps too as thy constant reproach. Thou hast formed me, but by so doing thou hast undertaken as thy duty to transform me. Close quote. Parenthesis. It will be gathered from the above that the guardian of the threshold is an astral figure, revealing itself to the student's awakened higher sight. And it is to this supersensible encounter that spiritual science conducts him. It is a lower magical process to make the guardian of the threshold physically visible also. That was attained by producing a cloud of fine substance, a kind of frankincense resulting from a particular mixture of a number of substances. The developed power of the magician is then able to mold the frankincense into shape, animating it with the still unredeemed karma of the individual. Such physical phenomena are no longer necessary for those sufficiently prepared for the higher sight. And besides this, anyone who sees, without adequate preparation, his unredeemed karma appear before his eyes as a living creature would run the risk of straying into evil byways. Bulwer Lytton's title Zanoni contains in novel form a description of the guardian of the threshold. Close parenthesis. What is here indicated in narrative form must not be understood in the sense of an allegory, but as an experience of the highest possible reality befalling the esoteric student. The guardian must warn him not to go a step further unless he feels in himself the strength to fulfill the demands made in the above speech. However horrible the form assumed by the guardian, it is only the effect of the student's own past life, his own character risen out of him into independent existence. This awakening is brought about by the separation of will, thought, and feeling. To feel for the first time that one has oneself called a spiritual being into existence is in itself an experience of the deepest significance. The student's preparation must aim at enabling him to endure the terrible sight without a trace of timidity, and at the moment of the meeting to feel his strength so increased that he can undertake fully conscious the responsibility for transforming and beautifying the guardian. If successful, this meeting with the guardian results in the student's next physical death being an entirely different event from death as he knew it formerly. He experiences death consciously by laying aside the physical body, as one discards a garment that is worn out or perhaps rendered useless through a sudden rent. Thus his physical death is of special importance only for those living with him whose perception is still restricted to the world of the senses. For them the student dies, but for himself nothing of importance is changed in his whole environment. The entire supersensible world stood open to him before his death, and it is this same world that now confronts him after death. The guardian of the threshold is also connected with other matters. The person belongs to a family, a nation, a race. His activity in this world depends upon his belonging to some such community. His individual character is also connected with it. The conscious activity of individual persons by no means exhausts everything to be reckoned with in a family, a nation, or a race. Besides their character, families, nations, and races have also their destiny. For persons restricted to their senses, these things remain mere general ideas, and the materialistic thinker, in his prejudice, will look down with contempt on the spiritual scientist when he hears that for him family and national character, lineal or racial destiny, are vested in beings just as real as the personality in which the character and destiny of the individual man are vested. The spiritual scientist becomes acquainted with higher worlds, of which the separate personalities are members, just as arms and legs are members of the human being. Besides the separate individuals, a very real family and national group soul and racial spirit is at work in the life of a family, a people, or a race. Indeed, in a certain sense, the separate individuals are merely the executive organs of these family group souls, racial spirits, and so on. It is nothing but the truth to say, for instance, that a national group soul makes use of each individual man belonging to that nation for the execution of some work. The group soul of a people does not descend into physical reality, but dwells in higher worlds, and in order to work in the physical world, makes use of the physical organs of each individual human being. In a higher sense, it is like an architect making use of workmen for executing the details of a building. In the truest sense, everyone receives his allotted task from his family, national, or racial group soul. Now, the ordinary person is by no means initiated into the higher design of his work. He joins unconsciously in the tasks of his people and of his race. From the moment the student meets the guardian, he must not only know his own tasks, but must knowingly collaborate in those of his folk, his race. Every extension of his horizon necessarily enlarges the scope of his duties. What actually happens is that the student adds a new body to his finer soul body. He puts on a second garment. Hitherto he found his way through the world with the coverings enveloping his personality, and what he had to accomplish for his community, his nation, his race, was directed by higher spirits who made use of his personality. And now, a further revelation made to him by the guardian of the threshold is that henceforth these spirits will withdraw their guiding hand from him. He must step out of the circle of his community. Yet, as an isolated personality, he would become hardened in himself and decline into ruin did he not himself acquire those powers which are vested in the national and racial spirits. Many, no doubt, will say, quote, "Oh, I have entirely freed myself from all lineal and racial connections. I only want to be a human being, and nothing but a human being," unquote. To these one must reply, quote, "Who then brought you to this freedom? Was it not your family who placed you in the world where you now stand? Have you not your lineage, your nation, your race to thank for being what you are? They have brought you up. And if now, exalted above all prejudices, you are one of the light-bringers and benefactors of your stock and even of your race, it is to their upbringing that you owe it. Yes, even when you say you are nothing but a human being, even the fact that you have become such a personality you owe to the spirits of your communities." Close quote. Only the esoteric student learns what it means to be entirely cut off from his family, national, or racial spirit. He alone realizes through personal experience the insignificance of all such education in respect of the life now confronting him. For everything inculcated by education completely melts away when the threads binding will, thought, and feeling are severed. He looks back on the result of all his previous education as he might on a house crumbling away brick by brick, which he must now rebuild in a new form. And again, it is more than a mere symbolical expression to say that when the guardian has enunciated his first statement, there arises from the spot where he stands a whirlwind which extinguishes all those spiritual lights that have hitherto illumined the pathway of his life. Utter darkness, relieved only by the rays issuing from the guardian himself, unfolds before the student, and out of this darkness resounds the guardian's further admonition, quote, "Step not across my threshold until thou dost clearly realize that thou wilt thyself illumine the darkness ahead of thee. Take not a single step forward until thou art positive that thou hast sufficient oil in thine own lamp. The lamps of the guides whom thou hast hitherto followed will now no longer be available to thee." Close quote. At these words the student must turn and glance backward. The guardian of the threshold now draws aside a veil which till now had concealed deep life mysteries. The family, national, and racial spirits are revealed to the student in their full activity, so that he perceives clearly, on the one hand, how he has hitherto been led, and no less clearly, on the other hand, that he will henceforward no longer enjoy this guidance. That is the second warning received at the guardian at the threshold from, that is the second warning received at the threshold from its guardian. Without preparation, no one could endure the sight of what has here been indicated. But the higher training, which makes it possible at all for the student to advance up to the threshold, simultaneously puts him in a position to find the necessary strength at the right moment. Indeed, the training can be so harmonious in its nature that the entry into the higher life is relieved of everything of an agitating or tumultuous character. His experience at the threshold will then be attended by a premonition of that felicity which is to provide the keynote of his newly awakened life. The feeling of a new freedom will outweigh all other feelings, and, attended by this feeling, his new duties and responsibilities will appear as something which man, at a particular stage of life, must needs take upon himself. The end of chapter 10.